Construction Tech.
And we saw that even though most videos weren't aimed at children under 13, the ones that were tend to get more views. And beyond that, videos that featured children under 13, regardless of their target audience, were even more popular.
Welcome to the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast. We deliver the latest tech policy news and brightest tech policy experts to you. Wherever you are, so that you can stay productive, relevant, and informed in less time. From Washington, D.C., it's the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast with Joe Miller.
Trump falsely claims that Google manipulated millions of votes. Beto O'Rourke wants to hold tech companies accountable for hate speech. And Patrick Van Kessel is my guest. Hey, everybody. In a tweet Monday, President Trump cited a debunked study to claim that Google manipulated between 2.6 million and 16 million votes. Even the author of the study Trump cited, Robert Epstein, a psychologist at the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology, said the president's claim was false. Here's the president's tweet. Wow. Report just out. Google manipulated some 2.6 million to 16 million votes for Hillary Clinton in 2016 election. This was put out by a Clinton supporter, not a Trump supporter. Google should be sued. My victory was even bigger than thought. Epstein says the report showed bias, but not that Google manipulated votes. The report has been discredited many times since it was released in 2017. Democratic presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke says he wants to hold tech companies accountable for hate speech, despite the fact that Section 230 shields tech companies from liability for content posted by third parties. The proposal is part of a sweeping gun reform proposal O'Rourke released and looks to connect the dots between online radicalization and real-world violence. The Federal Communications Commission is considering designating the digits 988 as a national suicide prevention mental health hotline. The proposal was laid out in a joint report to Congress last week by the FCC's Wireline Competition Bureau and Office of Economics and Analytics. It's endorsed by FCC Chairman Ajit Pai. A class of LGBTQ plus content creators is suing YouTube for allegedly discriminating against their content. The complaint states that YouTube concealed their content, limited their subscribers, and thwarted their ability to sell ads, according to The Hill. The case is filed in the Northern District of California, San Jose Division. YouTube says their algorithms don't demonetize or discriminate against content posted by the LGBTQ plus community. Facebook and YouTube announced Monday that China has been using the platforms to spread misinformation about the uprising in Hong Kong. Twitter says it found 936 accounts originating from China that Twitter found were designed to spread discord in Hong Kong. Prompted by Twitter, Facebook found 7 pages, 3 groups, and 5 accounts spreading misinformation, which collectively boasted some 15,000 users. Some 200,000 accounts were active in spreading misinformation, according to Facebook. Facebook says it's striving to continuously improve. Twitter suspended the accounts. Finally, The Hill reports that the FCC has a proposal on circulation that would increase oversight of the Lifeline program, the federal subsidy for broadband that offers users $9.25 per month to help defray the cost of broadband in low-income households. The FCC is zeroing in on waste, fraud, and abuse, it says, pervades the program. An FCC Inspector General report found Lifeline subsidies were going to some 50,000 deceased individuals. You can find links to all these stories in the show notes and also in our Twitter feed. And our handle is at Washing Tech. Stay with us.
You're plugged into the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast, the inclusive voice of tech policy.
I'm joined today by Patrick Van Kessel, senior data scientist at Pew Research Center, specializing in computational social science research and methodology. He's the author of studies that have used natural language processing and machine learning to measure negative political discourse and news sharing behavior by members of Congress on social media. Prior to joining Pew Research Center, he worked at NORC at the University of Chicago as a data scientist and technical advisor on a variety of research projects related to health, criminal justice, and education. Please welcome Patrick Van Kessel. Patrick, thanks for joining me.
Happy to be here, Joe. Thanks.
So the DOJ is currently reviewing a multi-million dollar fine the Federal Trade Commission wants to impose on YouTube for its finding that YouTube's violated the Children's Online Privacy Act provision that prohibits data collection from children under 13. So we're here to talk about that analysis that you, Sky Tour, and Aaron Smith released late in July, looking at the trends of what people actually watch when they go to YouTube. So let's start with the methodology, Patrick. How many YouTube subscribers did you look at, and how did you go about conducting this analysis?
So we started playing around with the YouTube API last year, just exploring it to see what we might be able to study. The Pew Research Center has done a lot of surveys on public opinion relating to various tech trends and social media platforms. And we've asked a lot of questions about YouTube before, trying to understand how the public uses it, but we had never looked at data on the platform directly. And one of the things that we noticed is that there's actually a pretty big lack of big picture descriptive data on what YouTube actually is, the kinds of videos that get uploaded there, what people watch, who's producing what kind of content. Our surveys show that YouTube is the most popular social media platform on the web. 73% of U.S. adults say that they use the site, and it's 90% for 18 and 24-year-olds. So we decided that it would be really valuable to researchers and policymakers just to get a top-down view of the platform. One of the first problems that we ran into there was that there isn't any exhaustive master list of YouTube channels. So you can get short lists of the top, 50 or 100 channels in different categories, and you can get detailed data on particular channels if you know which ones you want to look at. But in order to do the analysis we wanted, we had to develop our own list of channels. So we spent most of last year running our own custom script to map YouTube and identify as many channels as possible. One of the things that the API lets you get are related videos. So we started with that short list of top channels and grabbed all of their videos, and then we grabbed all of the video recommendations for those videos, and then we repeated that process for every new video and channel we ran into. And by the end of the year, we had pretty much found every channel we could, over a million of them. But since that was a really long list, we decided to focus on the most popular channels, which we defined rather arbitrarily as any channel that has at least 250,000 subscribers as of the end of last year. Had we gone any lower than that, the data would have been overwhelming. So we just kind of used 250,000 as a nice threshold. So we took these popular channels, and there were almost 44,000 of them. And we tracked every single video that they produced during the first week of 2019. And then we followed each of those videos for a week afterwards to see how well they performed. And the volume of video content that they uploaded in that single week was just astounding. They produced almost 250,000 videos, which collectively totaled over 48,000 hours of content, which is a really hard number to wrap your head around. So I'll put it this way. If you were to try to watch all of those videos full time, 8 hours a day, it would take you 16 years. So we had all this content. We wanted to analyze it, but obviously we couldn't do that ourselves. So we filtered the videos down to just those that were completely in English. And that brought the number of videos down to around 40,000. And then we used crowdsourcing to have a bunch of human coders go through and watch the videos and flag them for different types of content. So things like what the video was about, whether it seemed like it was targeted towards children, whether it was about U.S. politics or international politics. So the bulk of the findings in our report are from that subset of videos where we did that in-depth content analysis. But it was a lot of data to deal with, and it was a really challenging project. And
even 40,000 YouTube channels to review is just mind-boggling.
Yeah, it was quite an undertaking.
So tell us about what you found, especially with respect to children. What should policymakers be concerned about?
So one of the things that we did was go through and examine all of the English language videos more closely to look at their topics and other things. And one of those other things that we looked at was whether or not the video seemed to be clearly aimed at children under the age of 13. Because that, is kind of a subjective thing to categorize, the definition that we used was pretty conservative. So these were videos where multiple people agreed that teenagers or adults wouldn't be interested in watching them. Things like nursery rhymes and simple cartoons, sing-alongs, kids playing with toys. There were a lot of toys, actually. 28% of the kids' videos that we looked at mentioned were about toys and games. But across the nearly 40,000 English videos that we analyzed from these popular channels, we actually found that children's content wasn't all that common. It was just 4% of the videos that were clearly aimed at kids. But those videos did tend to get more views. So they averaged around 150,000 views compared to just 100,000 for videos that were aimed at a general audience. And channels that uploaded children's videos also had more subscribers. So if a channel uploaded a children's video, it averaged around 2 million subscribers compared to 1.2 million for channels that didn't post any kids' content during the week. And we also found that children's videos were longer. So half of them were at least 11 minutes long compared to 7 minutes for other videos. Another thing that we looked at was whether or not a video featured a child that appeared to be under the age of 13. And again, that had to be fairly obvious. So things like family vlogs where parents and their kids are talking about their lives, things like videos where parents are filming their kids playing with toys. In some cases, it's hard to tell how old a kid is. So we required the majority of our content coders agreed that a video featured a kid. And as with children's content, videos featuring children weren't that common. It was just 2% of the English language videos that we looked at that featured a child that looked to be under the age of 13. But what did stand out to us was that these videos were more popular than basically any other type of content that we looked at. So videos with kids under 13 averaged three times as many views as other videos, 300,000 views versus 100,000 views. And it didn't even matter if the videos were geared towards kids. In fact, only 21% of the videos that featured kids were also clearly aimed at kids. And the flip side of that, just 13% of children's content featured a kid. So there wasn't much overlap between videos that were aimed at kids and videos that featured kids. The videos in that overlap did particularly well, but only a little better than videos with kids that were geared towards a general audience. So basically, we saw that even though most videos weren't aimed at children under 13, the ones that were tend to get more views, and beyond that, videos that featured children under 13, regardless of their target audience, were even more popular.
I wonder if it's children who are actually using those unsupervised by their parents. I wonder if they're the ones searching for those. Because I know with my kids, a lot of times I end up with like channels that I know I didn't subscribe to, and then it's like similar to the things you just described. So I wonder if at the age of 13, they just migrate over to TikTok or something.
Right. So it's one thing that's important to point out is that we looked at videos that are available on the main YouTube platform. And YouTube also has a separate app for children called YouTube Kids, which we didn't look at specifically. But we did download the app and we looked at a few of the videos on there. And as far as I can tell, everything that's on YouTube Kids is also available on the main platform. So those were included in our data. But there's no way to tell whether the views that went to the videos in our study came from people watching on the main platform versus the kids app.
Interesting. There was no way to break it out. Wow. So were there other things that seemed to be driving some of these views? Did you see particular keywords that that you noticed that seemed to pop up more?
Yeah. So outside of kids content and videos featuring kids, we noticed that video games were a really prominent and popular topic. Almost 1 in 5 of the videos that were uploaded by popular channels during the week were about video games, and they got more views. They were also much longer than other videos. Videos about vehicles and food and sports and toys were also more popular, but video games really stood out just for the sheer volume of content. And you mentioned keywords. Along those lines, we also looked at the words that were used in video titles to see if anything popped in terms of words that were associated with more views. And there were actually a lot of video game related keywords in that list as well. So the number one keyword associated with more views was Fortnite, which videos that mentioned Fortnite in their title got over 5 times as many views as other videos at the median. And there were also other video game keywords in the top 20 list, like PUBG and Player and Roblox.
Those all sound strangely familiar, Patrick.
And outside of that, you also have some of the usual suspects, words that you would imagine content creators using to capture potential viewers, like worst and moment, wrong, ultimate, hack, mystery, insane.
Wow.
And then there were, you know, also keywords that stood out within certain topical subsets of videos. So videos that belong to our miscellaneous or other category that mention the term ASMR in their title and challenge and prank, those drove more views. Beauty and fashion videos got more views if they use the word makeup. So that's clearly a really popular topic within that topical subset. And there were also a few keywords that popped for current events and political content, which was actually one of the least popular video topics that we analyzed. But within international current events and politics, videos that mentioned China in their title got more views. And for U.S. current events and politics, video titles that mentioned the term Trump or president got nearly twice as many views at the median as videos pertaining to U.S. current events and politics that didn't mention Trump or president.
So much for an anti-conservative bias.
Well, over a third of all of the U.S. current events or politics videos that we analyzed mentioned Trump or president. So it was a it wasn't an insubstantial subset of videos.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, thank you, Patrick, for joining me.
It's been a pleasure, Joe.
Now let's turn to an icebreaker question, get some career advice from you, and hear about what you're reading and watching these days. Okay, so it's time for this week's icebreaker. All right, what fictional world or place would you like to visit?
Well, my fiance has been forcing me to watch Farscape, which is this wacky 90s sci-fi show about an astronaut that gets launched into another galaxy through a wormhole. And honestly, that sounds pretty fun. It's a really campy world full of, you know, Jim Henson Muppet aliens, and I'd definitely visit that.
You know, I think I'd pick Middle Earth from the Tolkien books. We need a theme park for Middle Earth. Actually, you know what? I hear there's a rumor they're going to open one in Orlando. So that'll be, maybe I'll check that out. So career advice, Patrick, someone comes to you for career advice on getting started on their career here in DC. What do you tell them? What's the first piece of advice you think you'd give?
Well, one of the things I get asked for advice on most frequently is I want to do really cool stuff with data, but I don't know how to code. How do I go about becoming a data scientist? And, you know, I guess the advice I tend to offer is valid in a number of other fields, too, not just, you know, coding and programming. And that's just pick a project and run with it. You know, I think if you find an idea that excites you, whether, you know, it's a question you want to answer or something you want to build, and you break it down into steps and figure out what you need to do first, and then you just start Googling and take it piece by piece and find some code that someone wrote on Stack Overflow and get it working, and then start Googling again. Doing is the best way of learning. I don't honestly have any book recommendations for learning how to code or really anything. The internet is just an amazing resource, you know, even YouTube. You know, so if you can break down your interests into specific questions and start answering them, at some point, you'll be surprised to find that you've built a pretty strong foundation for a career and a portfolio of fun side projects to prove it. So I don't know how much that advice transfers to someone interested in policy, but for coding or engineering or other craft disciplines, I think the best way to learn is by getting your hands dirty and finding a project that motivates you.
That's great, because we have to have master so many skills now as people working in this space. I know, as you know, having this podcast, that, you know, it's just, there's so much more that goes with that than just coming in and turning on a mic. I've got to build relationships. I've got to look for sponsors. I've got to, you know, if I do a white paper, I have to do analytics myself if I want to do something other than the podcast. So to the extent that you can become a polymath in many ways and learn a lot of different skills, SEO, you know, coding, R, I guess, is the platform that people need to learn about.
Yeah, it feels overwhelming. There's, you know, we're constantly bombarded with new skills we should be picking up and so forth. But
yeah, it's just
jump in and start doing it.
Yeah, you're giving them the focused way, and I'm giving them the kitchen sink. But that's true. So now, what are you reading and watching these days?
Something related to tech. I finally got around to reading Bad Blood recently, and I thought that was really fascinating. It's about the Theranos scandal, and I think it's definitely worth a read for anyone interested, you know, in the tech world or startup world.
I watched The Great Hack on Netflix, all about Cambridge Analytica and the data breaches we've been seeing. It's pretty scary stuff.
But yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it's bizarre. But in any case, Patrick, thanks for joining me. Do you have any final ideas you'd like to leave with us before we close? And where can folks find you online?
Well, anyone interested in reading more about our research on YouTube can find the report on our center's website, pewresearch.org. The report is called A Week in the Life of Popular YouTube Channels, and you can find it there along with many other detailed reports and analyses on trends in social media, the internet, technology, and many other areas. And you can also stay up to date with our latest research on Twitter. Our institutional account is at Pew Research, and we have other accounts that focus on more particular research areas like the internet and technology. And then my handle is at P. Van Kessel, and I'm always happy to talk data, so feel free to reach out.
And you've been listening to Patrick Van Kessel, Senior Data Scientist at Pew. Patrick, thanks for joining me.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And that concludes episode 197 of the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you like what we do, we'd love to hear from you. Please take a moment. Head over to Apple Podcasts. Give it a review. It helps others know what they can expect from the show and really helps us out. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you back here next week. Take care.
Washing Tech.